when the wind blows puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
Well, it's time for Abandoned Manitoba. And if it isn't Mr. Sellout Crowds, local celebrity, Winnipeg famous Gordon Goldsborough.
Oh, I'm embarrassed.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Nadja. I'm wonderful, thanks.
How was the book launch?
Oh, great. It just was really fun, a lot of fun. I had a good turnout.
A really good turnout.
People had a good time, I think.
Yeah.
We got to share some surprises. We actually had two special guests at the launch.
Are you going to tell us who they were?
Well, they were connected, actually. We actually had an Orbit, that trash receptacle from the 1960s. I actually had one at the launch.
You managed to find one?
One of the very first ones, in fact.
Wow. And only Gordon Goldsborough, will be able to do
well,
that for your
book launch. The theme is abandonment.
Absolutely.
You know, you gotta have something there. Yeah. And the other highlight was that we had the designer of Orbit, a fellow named Peter Boychuk, a wonderful man, very friendly and nice. And, you know, he told people a little bit about his involvement with Orbit. So it made it, I think, a really special evening for me.
Well, I'm so glad that it went well.
It did.
I know you've been working so hard on that book. So, and it looks gorgeous because you bought a couple of copies in for us to give away. And I can't wait to have a look because the pictures say so much as well as the actual research, right?
Absolutely. I'm a visual person. I love, you know, the old saying about a picture worth a thousand words. I believe that. And so I tried as much as possible to include lots of pictures. So, you know, one of the drawbacks, of course, of doing radio is that you can only say so much. You know, you really need to, you know, illustrate things sometimes. And so that's where I really have gone beyond, I think, what I've been able to do here.
Well, I'm glad you brought these books in, and I'm sure our listeners will be very excited to get our hands on them. Now, let's go back to the hint from last week about today's Abandoned Manitoba.
Well, I said we were going to be talking about abandoned sites around the province that had a connection to a conservation-minded bear. And some people might have thought we were referring to Winnie the Pooh.
Yes, yes, I did.
But I think the only conservation he's concerned with is the conservation of honey. So that really wasn't what I was thinking. In fact, I was thinking about a different bear, one that actually originated in the United States. A real bear, in fact, a bear cub that was rescued from a forest fire and went on to become a symbol about forest fires and the prevention of forest fires. So many listeners will probably recall these posters where this bear wearing a ranger's uniform and holding a shovel would say, "Only you can prevent forest fires." And of course, because it was an American symbol, but Canadians embraced him too. And I think partly because for the same reason as in the U.S., for many years, in fact, it was perceived that, you know, humans had to have a role in preventing forest fires. You know, people started forest fires, but they also fought forest fires. And so they wanted to raise awareness about the whole notion of forest fires. And so the theme today is actually forest fires and how do you detect them? And mostly, and this is where we come into the abandonment part, it was mostly through the 20th century, it was with fire lookout towers.
So how were forest fires detected?
Well, you have to go back a little ways. So in the early 20th century, one of the things that maybe Manitobans don't know is that our natural resources, our minerals, our natural wildlife, our forests were not the property of the provincial government. They were the property of the federal government. So the federal government, therefore, had jurisdiction over, you know, overseeing them. And so the federal government would hire people, would hire rangers. Well, they would canoe around the province. They would ride on horseback around the province. In later years, they actually would fly an aircraft. After 1921, they would use aircraft to look for fires, look for smoke, you know, the telltale signs of a forest fire. And of course, as you can imagine, Manitoba is a big, big place. So to find those fires was a bit of a challenge. So they really only focused in the settled parts of the province, you know, the parts nearer where people lived. Because, of course, fires would then put people's livelihoods, people's homes in jeopardy. So that was how they did it in the early 20th century. But starting around the time that the federal government changed things, they began changing the technology, too.
So tell me about that change.
Well, 1930 is the important year. 1930 is the year that the federal government transferred to the provincial government responsibility for natural resources. So that's when all of these rangers that had previously been federal employees became provincial employees, and the province began building fire towers. So in 1931, for example, they built 19 of these towers, and they were, say, predominantly around sort of the edges of the settled parts of the province. Mostly they were made out of wood, and of course you can imagine that's maybe not the best thing to make a fire tower out of, not only because it could potentially burn if the fire got too close, but of course also it didn't have the durability. You know, and so eventually they made them out of steel. The height of the towers would range, of course, depending on the kind of forest they were in. The higher the trees, the higher the tower had to be, so you could be above the trees, but also depending on the terrain. You know, so if you're in flat, level ground, of course, you don't need to be too high. But if you are in rolling terrain, of course, you want to be on the top of all the hills so that you can get the best possible, you know, view. You know, it's because here on the ground, if you're on the ground, you only can see as far as the horizon, and that's only usually a few miles. You get up above that, though, if you get above the trees and on the top of a hill, well, you can sometimes see like 30, 40 miles. So that's the premise of all this, is you get high enough above the trees, then you can see quite a distance and see forest fires.
So you're saying 1931 was when these fire towers were constructed?
Well, they started them. Yeah, okay. That's when they started building it. And then they had a piece of technology inside that was very important called a fire finder. Now, the name sort of implies that they actually detected the fire, but they didn't. What the fire finder did was it gave the person making observations a way to relate where the fire was. So the fire finder would tell you what position on the compass the fire was relative to the tower. It would tell you which degree from north it was. And then it would also estimate the approximate distance to the fire. So you had these two pieces of information. You had the direction, you had the approximate distance, and that would be the information that you would relay on to other places.
And then once they detected it, how do they communicate their alert?
Well, yeah, that's absolutely important, right? Because you just can't have this information. You have to relay it to somebody who might go out and fight the fire. So in some cases, if they were in some of the more settled areas, they actually had telephone lines. Mm-hmm. This was the 1930s. Telephone was becoming more common throughout the province. So they would sometimes have the ability to pick up a phone and say, hey, there's a fire at such and such a bearing, you know, at this many miles away. But in some cases, they couldn't do that. They were far enough away from, you know, telephone lines that they adopted what I think is just a cool approach. They actually used carrier pigeons.
No.
Yeah. So they had, for example, a colony of these pigeons at Lac de Bonnie, where they had a major base for the provincial government. And they had a bunch of these pigeons at each of these towers. So if they detected a fire, they would write, I assume it was on a piece of paper, the bearing and the distance. They would fasten it to the pigeon. In fact, they would use two pigeons, because the idea is that if one of them maybe, you know, ran into some trouble, maybe a predator or something,
yeah,
one of them would hopefully get through, and they would release them, and of course they'd fly home. They'd fly to their base in Lac de Bonnie. They'd get this pigeon arriving, and oh, what's this? They find a little piece of paper. So if they got a number of these towers, so I came across a reference, for example, in 1936, where they had a fire that was detected near Great Falls along the Winnipeg River, and they said that within 30 minutes of the fire starting, four different towers, four positions around the fire had seen it at varying distances from about 20 miles to about 35 miles. They all sent their pigeons in, and they were able to triangulate based on each of the positions of the towers, the bearing, and they apparently got it so fast that it only burned about 5 acres of forest, which is absolutely remarkable.
So this actually worked.
It absolutely worked.
Oh my goodness.
You know, very low tech.
Yeah, yeah.
But very, very effective. Yeah.
Are fire towers still used today? I'm guessing the carrier pigeons may not be
well, no,
so
I think
much.
They were actually phased out probably in favor of radio. You know, they use things like shortwave and so on that has better range and better reliability. And if you ask, are they still in use? Well, in a word, no. Now, they were used into the 1980s, though. I found a government report from 1980 that said that there were actually 58 of these fire towers in operation then. But in preparing for this episode, I actually contacted the provincial government and asked them how many towers are still in use. And they said, well, zero.
Why?
Well, I think there's a couple of reasons. One thing they told me, for example, was that they had torn down a lot of the older ones because they were just deemed unsafe. They were getting old, like a little rickety. They didn't want anybody, you know, climbing them and potentially falling off, or the tower falling itself. You know, so just in the name of, you know, safety, they did that. But I think it's also technology. you know, around the settled parts of the province, of course, many of us now, of course, carry communications with us. We have cell phones so that if I were driving along and I saw a forest fire, I could phone it in and, you know, before long they have people out fighting it.
Not only phone it in, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, like all the ways to document
it. That's right, of course. Yeah. Well, and we're even getting to the point now of having sort of real-time satellite images. And you can see, you know, smoke plumes in satellite imagery. So, you know, technology is one of the parts of the story here. But I think the other part is the fact that our attitudes about fire control are changing as well. You know, we still certainly want to control fires that are going to put people's lives in jeopardy, that are going to burn property. But we also know, though, that fires are actually a useful thing. They are a necessary thing in the lives of many forests. You know, for example, jack pines must be burned in a fire to release their seeds. You know, so there is a necessity to have fire. You just can't suppress all fires and hope that things are going to be healthy. So I think that's part of the reason why these fire towers have been basically phased out.
Are there any fire towers left in Manitoba?
Well, yeah. This is where I have to give a shout out to a faithful listener, a fellow named Rod Biggs. He contacted me about this quite a long time ago, and he's been very patient waiting for me to talk about them on the radio. He was at a fly-in fishing camp in eastern Manitoba, up halfway up Lake Winnipeg. At Sassaginagak Lake. And he said, oh, there's a fire tower here. And I think it's no longer used as a fire tower. I think it's still used, though, as a communications tower, just to get the communications from the camp in and out. So there's certainly that one. A friend of mine, George Penner, also sent me a photo he took this summer at Woodridge, Manitoba, down in the southeastern part of the province, and there's a fire tower still there. I learned that there were two towers in the Brandon Hills, south of Brandon, a big forested area. Likewise, they put up fire towers to detect them there. And then, of course, because this is mostly a provincial story, and the provincial government has phased out these towers, that doesn't necessarily mean that the federal government has moved away from it too, because, of course, the federal government is responsible for national parks. They have jurisdiction, for example, over the Riding Mountain National Park. And I'm told that there are actually 6 fire towers still in Riding Mountain. Now, whether or not they're still used for fire detection, I don't know. I suspect probably not, but they're still there. So even though this is a technology that has kind of come and gone, there are still remnants of it around the province. And in fact, I would love to hear if any listener knows of other fire towers that are still standing. I'd love to hear about it.
Carrier pigeons, still my favorite part of this story. Gordon, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Nadja.
What's the clue for next week?
Well, as listeners know, I have a fixation with that fast disappearing prairie symbol, the grain elevator. And next week, we're going to talk about a little private elevator near Brunkild that has a sign inside it written in Japanese. And this sign underlies an interesting way in which that little elevator was built.
Intriguing. Gordon, thank you so much.
And we'll see you next week.
Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.